Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com reporting from Jacksonville, Florida and the 87th Annual IBM Convention. Today we had another bunch of activities all just jam-packed into one day, which included, again, the big three events, that is, where we all alternate a little bit and see different shows. Today I got to see Dave Cox's lecture, which was fantastic. I bought his lecture notes, and he's got just some great ideas, and I highly recommend him. In the evening, he was the MC for the our big gala show that we had, and that also happened to feature those who were the six finalists. And that included David Chandler from Japan. We had Hannah. We had David Hernandez from Florida, as well as Trent Jones from Illinois, Stuart McDonald from Michigan, Chris Randall from Nevada. All six of those guys were competing for first prize and potentially for the gold medal. And we'll find that out then tomorrow evening whether the gold medal is going to be awarded or not. And also we had in the afternoon David Kaplan, who had lectured, and then after the evening show was a lecture by Chad Long. So again, a pretty full day with a lot of really wonderful activities, and everybody seemed to be having a really good time. And so today I had an opportunity to sit down and chat with Michael Dardant, who is someone who did not compete this year, but he was competing in FISM, so he talks a little bit about that. But he is a past winner, actually, of the IBM, both the stage, I believe he's won in stage, but I know he's won in the close-up contest here in the past, as well as talking with Oscar Munoz, who is the contest chairman for the IBM, and then talking with Suzanne, who had won the close-up magician of the year at the Magic Castle. And she is going to be giving a lecture tomorrow as part of the one of the activities that we've got that is called the six-pack, in which there are six different activities going on at the same time, and you get to choose any two of those, and then they kind of alternate. But anyhow, she gets to talk about restaurant magic, so she gives us some insight and kind of what her lecture will be about. So you get a sneak preview of what she's going to be talking about for tomorrow. Well, let's hear from them from their own mouths here today on The Magic Word. Hello, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me today Mr. Michael Dardant. Hey there, Michael.
Hello.
I guess I should say multiple award-winning performer, Michael, and you have been winning a lot of contests.
Yeah, that's the title I prefer. Yeah, I want to focus on the wins because I didn't come back with an award from FISM, but I can still remind everyone of all the ones that I had previously.
That's right. Well, what is FISM anyhow?
You know, I mean, who cares, right?
It's just another contest.
I mean, big deal.
Well, going over to FISM, that had to be kind of a, well, not kind of, but for sure, just a pinnacle experience. So getting to go over to Italy and compete among all the rest of the guys.
Absolutely. Pretty much when I got there, I was immediately reminded of how fortunate I was just to be a part of it. And I really wanted to translate to everyone who had no idea what this was about that just being there was a huge accomplishment, mm-hmm. just being a part of that and just being able to witness magic at that caliber, anything at that caliber.
Yeah.
I've competed all my life in
right.
in film, speech and debate, and karate, fencing, track. And most of those I brought to a national level. But there's a huge difference bringing it to a global level
yeah.
and seeing that many people with their A-game bring
yeah.
it like flawless presentation that even the ones that were nervous and their hands shaking performing beautiful, flawless magic.
What was that like backstage?
Well, backstage, the main thing was the nervousness I've had for the last few months. So I've gotten kind of used to,
mm-hmm.
you know, butterflies eating my stomach lining.
Yeah.
It's kind of a nice feeling now to just relax and be rid of that nervousness. So I expected that. I knew I was going to be performing while nervous, but there was a huge weight for me, and I would rather just, you know, have 15 minutes to prepare and get on. And so being backstage in the green room and waiting for that long was just killing me.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting hungry. I was getting thirsty. I was getting sober. And I was like, let's get this over with,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like the waiting, the anticipation was killing the nervousness. And I knew, you know, you need a little nervousness for sure. And I felt that when I finished, I had a great response.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that I won the crowd over.
For both,
yeah, even more so for stage, because mm-hmm. it's so difficult with an international crowd. And the fact that we got roaring laughter was a huge accomplishment, I think.
In English, because
you don't know how it's going to play. It wasn't until I got there I realized, you know, North Americans make up less than 10%. It was you.
Yeah.
And, like, the competitors. And that was about it, right? And Sean.
Yeah.
And there wasn't really that. It's like less than 10% of the attendance were North Americans who were used to being around. Every country
I think
has
counted about 20 people from America.
Yeah. And so that's less than
2,500
less than
people.
10%.
Yeah, like 1%.
It was like 1% of the... And so you start realizing that everyone has their own style of comedy, their mm-hmm. own culture. I mean, like, I don't get the German's comedy at all.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, no, but really, like, the German comedy magician, the guy next to me is in tears laughing, and I'm just going, I don't get it. You know, and so there's a lot of culture clashes there.
True.
And we saw a lot of that in some of the drama of FISM in the many different countries represented and how they felt about how it was run and what was going on.
Well, one big thing for me, the fact that you were competing in both close-up and stage, most of the people, I would say 99% of the people there, were all just competing in one or the other.
There was only two guys.
There was only you.
Me and one other guy.
They were actually competing in both. To be considered on that level, to be able to compete even at FISM, certainly says a lot, whether you won or not. I mean, talk about multiple butterflies, I would think, okay, I'm worried about this now, I got to worry about the next FISM.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. It was kind of crazy, and then I realized when I got there why everybody looked at me like I was crazy when I told them I was in two categories, because it's just double the stress.
Yeah, nobody does that.
But my attitude was it was double the chances of being able to come
good
back
attitude.
With something.
Yeah, positive attitude.
And really, in the grand scheme of things, no, I didn't come back with a trophy. I don't have, you know, Shin Lin's Crystal Award that he gets to come home with, that little punk. No, I love him. I'm so proud of him.
Yeah.
But I was seventh in my category, in close-up seventh, and then I think it's 11th in Comedy Magic. And at that level, mm-hmm. I mean, until we meet other planets with magicians from around the universe, that's the best in the world you're competing against. So for the next 3 years, that's what Sean was pointing out to me. He's like, you're in the top 10 in the world. That's pretty awesome. And so... it made me realize, like, that is a huge accomplishment. And also I realized when I got there that I was one of the very few kind of rookies, because it was amazing how many people I met that is their third, fourth time competing at FISM mm-hmm. trying to go for an award. Mm-hmm. And that was my first.
Right.
And it is a whole different experience.
It was your first time actually being to any FISM, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I was talking with Christian Painter, and he was saying that he was recommending for anyone who wants to compete that you should actually attend a FISM so you know what you're up against, because he felt like that there were some Americans who were there and competing that were out of their league, and they are great back home. However, that once you get there on this other level and you start to see what you're up against, it's like, wow, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
And so what that will make you do is really, I mean, you're bringing your A game to begin with, and you know that's the case, but then whenever you will see these other competitors, if you've never seen that before, then you might say, I need to rework this a little bit in order to compete on that level.
I immediately started thinking of ways that I would rework my act. I definitely recommend that. I think mm-hmm. that if I had the opportunity, I should have gone before. You should experience that. You should witness what goes on. It's not even being out of your league. It's almost like you're in a whole different sport where you don't even know what's going on. Like, like you're used to performing on solid ground, and then all of a sudden they're like, no, we need you to do your act in a fun jump. You know, because it's such a different environment that you have to really adapt on the spot. And as much as I thought I prepared, having done lectures in Europe for 2 months, it was not nearly enough, because immediately I started thinking of things I would have done differently once I started watching everything going on.
For example, what...
For example, I opened with my tip jar.
Yes.
Thumb tips.
Yeah.
But in America, that works. It kills. In the United States, we get the relation, the play on words between gratuity, tip, and the fact that that we use what's called a thumb tip.
In other countries, don't tip.
In other countries, not only do they not tip, they don't call it a thumb tip. They call it a fake thumb. It's a whole different terminology. Mm-hmm. And so when you need that much explanation
yes.
for your opening joke, then you're already backpedaling,
yeah.
trying to overcome that to continue with your act. So had I realized that, I should have restructured the act, and as much as I love that, you don't want to kill your babies. That's one of my mm-hmm. that's one of my main jokes that I love. I didn't write it for FISM. I didn't write it for an international crowd. I wrote it for this crowd. I
sure.
wrote it for the IBM, for a crowd that would understand that and relate to the joke.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just one example, and that's the very beginning of my act.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to see what played and what didn't, and watch that in other acts as well.
When I was asking someone about, did you see Michael Darnot? And they said, Darnot, was that the guy? He had the real hair, the fake hair. It had like a reel with the hair on it. And I said, that was him. So it's funny what some people have
yeah.
a takeaway,
and see that joke killed.
Yeah.
So that joke, even though you have people that don't even speak English, that I don't know if they understand hair, and they even understand what I mean by real,
mm-hmm.
but the visual of that, and it just worked, and
yeah.
that joke really hit hard.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to see what would work and what didn't, and
mm-hmm.
The Grand Prix champion Pierrick, mm-hmm. who he did an amazing close-up act. The guy sitting next to me, he's from Germany. He had missed most of the FISM. He had come late. So he's watching the finals
yeah.
and seeing these acts for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And after he watches Pierre's acts, he says, it's so simple. And I'm thinking, simple? Because I've seen his act three times now. I'm like, are you kidding me? Because he's got several decks of cards. He's got a pocket that jumps across. He's got
yeah.
a watch that jumps over, and silk that's hopping up back and forth.
Yeah,
and he lifts his leg up in a weird way and sits
yeah.
on the table. And like, that's not simple at all, but what he meant was simple to follow.
Yes.
Because the setup
the
isn't simple.
Of it.
The writing isn't simple,
mm-hmm.
but every audience can follow it. And the fact was, I saw him perform it for the TV show, because some of us were asked to
yes.
repeat our acts for the television show. He did the entire act in Italian.
Wow.
Which meant I understood nothing.
Yes.
Except I understood everything because he was so visual.
Mm-hmm.
So if he looks at his wrist, you know he's looking for his watch.
Yes.
And if it's not there, you realize it's gone. So it doesn't matter what he's saying or what language it's in, because
it plays well in all languages.
And he can actually do the act in four languages.
Mm-hmm.
So he deserves that award, even if you don't know his act. But when you realize what kind of work's gone into it and what he can do with it,
right.
that's a very beautifully written act. The fact that he can perform it in four different languages, and the fact that he could kind of perform it for anyone in any language, and it's still going to play.
What was the other guy, by the way, who was
Hector Mancha?
No, not Hector, but who was doing close up and stage? Who was another? Said there was one other person.
He won in Grand Illusion. I forget which place, maybe third place, but he had two acts, one that was in parlor, and then one in originally general magic, and they moved his category because he
yeah.
did illusions. He had the beach theme.
Oh, yes.
I can't think of his name right now, but he had the beach theme with the two girls.
Two
blondes. Yeah.
Right. And
you can't forget the two blonde girls.
Well, I remember them
yeah.
floating across that.
And they floated across a towel or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
It looked like a water. I do not remember what his name
yeah.
was. I want to say he
very
was.
Very interesting.
Was
Straight Jack. He appeared in the back of the crowd. He
yes.
had a lot going on in 10 minutes.
Right. That's
and
right.
So, yeah, he
well,
won an award.
Back on the television, in the sense that they had the whole stage all set up for TV and everything,
right.
I understood that some of the acts had to perform, or rather practice, at 4 in the morning. I mean, when did you go over and get rehearsal time?
Kitty and I had our tech for stage at, like, I think 11 o'clock at night. Things
night
kept getting
mm-hmm.
moved back. There were a lot of challenges. At one point, the curtain broke, and they weren't able to close it or open it. So that made a huge challenge for us, because we were worried about the time limit. Because if you go 1 second over,
mm-hmm.
you're disqualified, as Woody Aragon can talk about
yes.
In card magic. Because
right.
Because of the standing ovation and response that he got from the audience, he got disqualified because he wasn't able to finish his act in time.
Isn't that something that you're too good?
10 seconds over. It's
yeah.
called being too good, I guess,
yeah.
at what you do. That
yeah.
if you get that kind of response, you gotta get the crowd to calm down so you can finish your act,
mm-hmm.
Because FISM rules are very specific, and you go 1 second over, you're
right.
done. You're done. You get the red light, you're finished.
Now, you're not competing, obviously, here this year in IBM. You're kind of done competing for a while? You're just going to, you're not going to rest on your laurels. You're going to continue to work and perform, I guess, at conventions, but not compete.
It's funny because when you came to bring me the cards in the room, I was talking about how Ed Ripley is working so hard to prepare his act, and he's practicing in the mirror over and over, and I'm just chilling watching TV, and it feels so nice to relax because I know the feeling of when you're constantly focused on your act, and even if you're not rehearsing at the time, even if you're not looking in the mirror, in your mind, you're going over it over and over and over. It gets hard to even hold a conversation because you're just replaying it in your head, and it gets to the point that it drives you crazy. And I think that I have a nice little break that I can figure out what I want to do, what act I want to do, if I want to continue with the same act and make some changes, or if I want to work on a whole new act, if where I'm going to be with my life, because I'm pursuing, you know, several different avenues of entertainment. So I don't know where I'll be in 3 years. I would love to go to Korea. I would love to go, even if I was just attending. Having been a part of FISM, now I want to go back. I want to continue to be a part of it forever. And so the fact that it's going to be in South Korea is amazing. That's an area of the world I've never seen. And I know that it's going to be a whole new challenge. Just because I've experienced FISM in Italy doesn't mean I'm prepared for South Korea. And so I have about a year to figure it out, because then, you know, the qualifying round will be a year later to know if I'm going to compete at FISM. So, but now that I got a taste for it, even though I thought I kind of felt like if I had come back with an award, I would have said, okay, I'm done. I did that. I didn't really need to do that, but it was just something I had to do. But not coming back with an award, but being in the top 10 and being that close gives you that taste in your mouth where you're like,
I'm almost there. I think I can do
there.
It.
I think that if I just tweak it a little, I could take this thing, and I've, you know, knowing what I know, and there's just something about competitions that just drives you forward. You know?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people should compete, and the SAM has had some, or the SAM did not have any contests this year. I think they just had a few contestants and decided they were going to lay out and not have the contest this year. We, on the other hand, have 24 people,
yeah,
I think,
that's
or
quite
so.
A few.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Had 2 days of stage contests here, so it has been really good. Well, anyhow, I just wanted to kind of get your take on your thoughts and everything on the convention, how things have been going, and also about FISM, kind of a follow up on that too. Even though we're here at the IBM convention and talking about that, I wanted to see what your thoughts were, so I appreciate your sharing that.
Absolutely.
Great. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Michael Dordant. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and one of the people who is one of the backbone, I have to say, of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, and because he is everywhere, it seems like, is Oscar Munoz. Hey, Oscar.
Hi, how are you doing, Scott?
Fine, thank you. And I have to say this because that you have served on several committees. You were on the board. You were going to be, after Joe Turner, you're the first international president. What is it? The president-elect, I guess, kind of a thing. And, of course, been serving as contest chairman. You and Melody have been working together for years.
Thank God for Melody, yes.
That's right. And so that's something that's going to be going on. And so as working as a contest chairman, that has its own unique set of challenges, I guess you'd say.
I think so. It's kind of hard to be a contest chairman because, you know, a lot of your friends are competing. And, and sometimes
it's hard being a judge for that same reason.
Exactly. And it's hard because you're giving up your time. And again, it's opinion and matters. And we all have had those days. Sometimes didn't go the way we planned it. And it's hard. I don't like the feeling.
Yeah.
But because I am in charge, then therefore it has to get done. Somebody has to do it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm the one.
Were you inspired to be the contest chairman after you had won the Gold Cups?
You know, I kind of fell into
it. It was 99, wasn't it?
I won the Gold Cups in 1999. Yeah. The second time it was going to happen to me was Chase Curtis in 2003. Mm-hmm. So the competition is totally different than when I competed.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think I could win the Gold Cups now with the quality of competitors that we have today. Sure. It's pretty strong. I mean, I think that throughout the years, the bar has been lifted and lifted and lifted, that it gets harder and harder.
It's making it harder, too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's harder for the judges now, too, as well, you know, to compare and to, you know, I think judges are not getting smarter, or as equally growing with the contestants. You know, judges are, I can see more than the layman or the person who does it on the weekend side versus the person who does it all the time.
Right.
Yeah. But
those others who have won, I think, in the past, it is a very prestigious award, just as the gold medal is for
state. Sure. The gold medal and the gold cups has high standards, you know, and I think that it would diminish the award if we just gave them out just because we had to.
True. You know? Well, the Grand Prix for FISM, since we're just coming off of that,
right,
there is that
right.
comparison, of course, and we had originally created the Grand Prix, I'm sorry, the gold medal and the gold cups right. to kind of give that kind of prestige to
right.
our organization.
Sure.
And with Lance Burnt being the first one who had won the gold
right,
medal.
Right, exactly. And Johnny Ace Palmer.
Then won the first of the gold cups.
Yeah.
And then David Williamson had
right.
won. You and yeah. Chase, I think that's been about it.
And then,
it?
No, we had Joe Gibbons.
Oh, that's right, Joe won that, yes.
And
he
had,
went on and won first prize at the FISM.
The guy from England, Stephen Bedwell. Stephen Bedwell was
that's
also
right.
winner
yeah,
of the gold
Steve,
cup.
Yeah.
And from Florida, Giovanni was also a winner of the gold
cups. Forgot. So we have had probably about eight people or so, whatever
right.
that comes
There's
to.
There's a total of eight people.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then as far as the gold medal, Greg Fruin, Howard Hale.
Lance Burton, Howard Hale, George Soterio.
Yeah.
I forget the lady from China who won the one with the bells at the time.
Yeah. It wasn't Jade or
no.
Julia Chan. I can't remember
no,
either.
No, no.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I mean, but they're not given often,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think IBM takes pride in giving the award and that it's just not given to anybody.
Yeah, it because is a prestigious
value,
thing.
Yeah, the value
It should be
of,
special.
Yeah, it should be special. And it's harder to win now.
Yeah.
It's not easy. So it gives it more value. I would love to, trust me, I would love to be able to give them out. And, you know, because I rejoice in the fact that somebody's going, moving up and carrying on the
right.
magical art. But when you have five judges, and we sat for a long time, as you know, debating and talking, and mostly we're almost going on 3 hours after the competition was over.
Well, that was one of the things I was going to ask you about our judges, about how you go about finding judges and getting people who are qualified, who have a good base of comparison and know their stuff. How
right.
do you go about selecting judges?
The way I try to select judges are people who have been in the business for quite some time, have themselves performed and been on stage, perform at the castle such as yourself,
yep.
have performed at different parts of the country and the world, their magic. So they know what they're talking about. They know what they look for versus somebody that does it on the weekends who may not know the latest moves in the business.
Right. They may be a YouTube baby. Or
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and it's hard to ask a judge to give 3 or 4 hours of their time that they're at a convention they paid for.
Right.
You know? And I'm grateful for those who step forward and say
because
yes.
they're donating their time and they're not being obviously reimbursed. We're not even
right.
getting a lunch for it. Or
right,
you know,
exactly.
used to be you got a lunch or something.
Not now. I don't even. I don't think
yeah,
I've eaten today.
Yeah.
So yes, I understand that.
So it is important. I think that you have people who do have a good background, good base of comparison, and then also the idea that they're going to be going into a room and then kind of talking this over then as well. Certainly that there are points that are awarded, but then it still comes down to trying to judge art.
Right. And we all judge art differently.
Mm-hmm.
What you may think is good may not agree with me,
mm-hmm.
and that's what makes this magic world magical is you may say that Mona Lisa was awesome,
mm-hmm.
and I may look at it as just a picture of a lady.
Right.
You know?
Same thing with abstract. Could be abstract art or
right.
classical art or
exactly.
whatever that you like. Everyone has their own opinion.
Opinion.
So do we throw out the high and the low? What are the
Well, usually we do to throw out the high and the low, and then we add them up.
Mm-hmm.
Then we take a look at, and if you're the case today, as you saw, that the people's choices lined up with the judge's choices.
Mm-hmm. That's not always the case.
And they're not always the case, but today it was the case.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that we had the judges' scores, and then we had the people's choices,
mm-hmm.
and they lined up the way we had set it out.
Yeah.
Which was amazing to me, because that happened to us at the stage
right.
competition as well. They were picked first, and then the scores lined up with what the judges' scores were.
Right.
You know, so we would ask the judges, who do you think would you place, and we laid the pictures up, and then we looked at the scores, and mm-hmm. they ended up the same way, which is amazing.
Well, also, whenever that you're looking at the 10 different items, I believe it is, that whether it's, you know, performance and opening and closing and all these other kinds of things, there are certain things that are weighted more than others, like
right.
originality.
Right, and originality, which is a big high score. You know, it's original. It's something never seen before that brings you up and
right.
gives you a score.
And fooled you,
yes, of course. And then you got, you know, some that, a technical skill. How technical did they do it? You know, was it beyond expectation? So, I mean, there's different things that we look at as judges. And mm-hmm. I have to kind of put all that information together for you guys so you guys can make a decision. Yes, correct. I'm right. You, oh, I see that. I didn't see that. Oh, that's great.
Right.
And that's what we bring five people together to talk about it
mm-hmm.
and decide.
Right.
It's not me deciding. It's the judges deciding.
Right, right. Well, there has to be an arbitrator. You're not even an arbitrator. You're just really kind of the overseer and trying to put the whole thing together
right.
and get the ducks lined up, basically.
Exactly.
You know?
So it's not me making the choice.
You have no input whatsoever.
I have no input other than showing you this is what you guys said. This is what you guys scored. Are
right.
you in agreement?
Right.
And that's my. I cannot influence anybody else.
So they're the judges are the ones really who should be taking the heat of anything.
Exactly. But I think I
signed up for this now. So, when do people approach you saying they want to judge, or do you find people, or how does one go about being a judge?
I usually get approached by people, mm-hmm. and or some come up and volunteer. I mean, and if they're qualified enough to be a judge, in other words, if they've been at these conventions, if they themselves are professional performers,
mm-hmm.
I would gladly say yes. I mean, and that's the hard part, is to try to find the people that are willing to give up their
right.
time. You know?
Well, that's what we were saying there a while ago, because we're paying to come to the convention, or some people, let's say, who are the talent who are being paid to come here.
Right.
And they were already giving of their time, you know,
right.
being compensated. But at some point, it's like, well, gee,
yeah,
you know, using me up.
You just use me for doing three rounds of close-up work, and
yeah.
I did the stage thing, and now you want me to judge, and okay.
Or it's been
no,
3
thanks.
Hours of my time.
Yeah.
Because this is just kind of something else that they're doing just out of the love of the art,
right.
basically.
Yeah, and I really appreciate them taking that time.
Yeah.
Because they can easily say no,
sure.
and then I have to find somebody else that is qualified.
Right.
You know, and that's the hard part, is to find those people that are qualified.
Yeah, and there are not many people who are going to be qualified in
well,
both
I don't
stage
think,
and...
I think there are people qualified, but then I think those people, there are people who don't want to get slack. Who don't want to get
you mean the flack from the
right,
contestants.
Yeah. Why didn't you rate me high?
Yeah.
Why didn't I get first? Why didn't I get second? And some people don't want to get in that argument, or the judges don't want to get into that conflict.
Well, the judges in this particular case and the IBM are known.
Right.
You know who they are. At the TAOM, as you know, that
right.
we tend to keep that private, and so
right.
they don't give any kind of feedback or anything.
Right.
And the reason, I'm told, is that the judges do not want to have to respond to the parents
right.
because it's a small organization
right.
and they see each other each
right.
year, they're friends, and if
right.
you judge them harshly, that they get upset about that. So.
And see, that's the other part. Running this competition, I know most of these people who are competing,
sure.
and I feel they're part of my friends, but here I am saying you're first, you're second. You can't pick your friends first and second. It's
yeah,
you know, and it's hard to know what in your head you wish would happen, but the way the scores end up and line up, it's totally different.
Yeah.
And now are you really my friend if you didn't help me win? You know, no. And it's when people ask me what did I think, I start now thinking about asking, do you really want to hear, or do you want to hear what you want to hear?
Yeah. You want to learn from what we're going to
yeah.
tell you? Or you,
and that's what contestants should be about.
Argue.
It's about the learning experience
mm-hmm.
of making yourself better. It's not that I hate you. It's not that I don't like
right.
you. It's this is the scores. You've asked these
right.
judges, these five people who you may or may not know, say, this is how we rate you.
Mm-hmm. And who better than the judges? Because they're the ones who had
right.
who have been selected because of the certain criteria
right.
in order to say what needs to be done, you know, right or wrong. And so
right.
once that is decided, then I think it's great that they can give good feedback
right.
to those people because they're going to grow. They
and you learn, and it's not shouldn't be taken personal.
That's right.
You know,
right.
So
good. Oscar Munoz, thank you very much, who's the contest judge and president-elect.
Thank you so much.
And good luck.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you later. Okay. That was Oscar Munoz. Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and one of the performers we have with us at the IBM convention here in Jacksonville is Suzanne, who is a previous winner of the Magician of the Year close-up gallery at the Magic Castle, Academy of the Magical Arts. Hello, Suzanne.
Hello, Scott. So happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you're here as well. And so you're going to be kind of making the convention scene. You're going to be going from here. You're going to be with us at the TAOM in Austin. And that'll be coming up in late August.
In September over Labor Day,
Early September, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
have you been to TAOM before? You have.
Yeah, I think I worked it in 2008 or 2009.
In which city?
Houston.
Were you there with us in Houston?
Yeah.
I don't know. They all started to run together for you?
Yeah. Everything runs together.
Do you like
together,
working at conventions?
I'm just kind of starting to work more of them.
Because you really do corporate stuff, maybe.
Yeah, corporate and restaurant stuff.
Up in Michigan or where?
Minneapolis, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of house parties. But I'm enjoying it. It's a lot of work. And sometimes a little bit more work than what I expect, but I am enjoying it. It's fun.
Is it because you just get to hang out with other magicians, and it's just kind of fun to talk with your peers all in one place, or what is it about?
Yeah, it is kind of that, and it's also fun to be able to kind of do my act for magicians, and it's kind of a different feel, and it's a learning experience for me. Mm-hmm. So,
what have you been learning?
I've been learning how to breathe more. You've got to breathe, and you have to act differently for magicians than you do for regular people.
You're talking about the beats, I guess, as far as performing, that magicians are looking for something different.
Right.
Than
yeah.
what the lay people are looking for and what they understand and appreciate.
Exactly, exactly. Magicians look ahead farther,
sure.
So you kind of have to switch it up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So do you change your act then for the conventions?
Or? No, my act itself isn't really changed, but my timing is slightly different.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Now, you work a lot of restaurants then also,
right.
don't you?
Yeah,
in Minneapolis?
Two restaurants in the Minneapolis area,
and
yeah.
when you're at conventions like this, then do you have someone else working for you, or do you just say we're off and there'll be no magic that night, or what?
Yep, I say we're off, and the restaurant likes to go, oh, yeah, Suzanne can't be here because she's in Vegas, or she's in Hollywood, or she's off teaching other magicians to be magicians, and
right.
so it then
gives them that cachet.
Get right, exactly. So they're thrilled to do that, and then it kind of gets to still be my house.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
You're going to be talking about restaurants tomorrow as part of the
six pack, I think, is what they
right.
call it. Yeah, right.
Just are you going to be talking about how to get the job? You're going to be talking about tricks to do. What kind of is the basics of your lecture going to be?
Well, my regular lecture for that is about 2 hours long, so I'm going to
compress it. Yeah,
I'm going to start it out with the kind of the who, what, where, when, why overview, and
yeah.
then I'm going to sort of take it from them to see what they want to know. Because mm-hmm. a lot of them, maybe some of them don't even want to work at restaurants, and they just kind of want to hear what I have to say just for entertainment purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But some do want to work at restaurants, and I need to give them what they need.
A few years ago, and I believe it was in Dallas, when David Sandy was working as the talent director, that he had me do restaurants, and I was for the six-pack.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of people who came and who were interested, and mine taught no tricks whatsoever. It was all about the business of restaurant magic, specifically how to go and find the restaurant, how to negotiate the contract that you might have with them, how that you interact with the waiters, and that kind of a thing. Ah, here comes our beer, then, also. Thank you very much.
And the only ale we have...
Yeah, we're at a pizza restaurant here. Just taking a break. We're just
trying to figure out what kind of beer I want.
Yeah, you want a pale or you want an ale?
I want an ale. Yeah,
sometime.
I'm kind of a beer snob.
Yeah. So speaking of beer snobs, and what kind of you like pale ales or you like India pale ales?
Yeah, I like India pale ales. I like we've got a really nice brewery in Minneapolis, Surly. You probably don't get Surly.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, Surly is fantastic.
S-U-R-L-E-Y or S-I-R?
Yeah, S-U-R-L-E-Y. Surly.
Huh. Okay.
And it's called Surly Furious. So if you can.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really good.
Bottled or canned?
I mean, it's a bottled, and then the Summit.
It's not a craft beer necessarily. It's a big brewery, then, is it?
Well, no. It started out as a craft.
So it's kind of like a Magic Hat. That is kind of a.
Yeah, sort of.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, that's grown.
And it's really very trying to do an English style. And then Summit Brewery is in St. Paul, mm-hmm. and my favorite beer of all time is called Summit Saga. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very, very yummy.
Mm.
They don't. They're not going to have that down here.
Probably not. Well, they might in Houston. However, if I get back, that's why I wanted to get that little tip on.
Oh,
there
Summit
as well.
Saga. Look for it for me, and you will. We will be friends for life.
And I can maybe bring some up to Austin when you come too.
Yay!
For the TAOM. So it's going back then to restaurants and working that. So there are people who are interested just on the business side of it, mm-hmm. because my philosophy has always been, for most of the lectures I give, is that we all know enough tricks. It's a matter of trying to know to learn the business side. But
right.
But you got to keep in mind that this is an organization where there are a lot of hobbyists. And then people who really want to just learn and know tricks, mm-hmm. and not necessarily the business side
right.
of it. So you,
you know, I'm not that interested in teaching the trick part,
yeah.
because I'm with
like
you.
The first trick you do at the table, or how to break the ice, or
I mean, I can tell them what the first trick that I do at the table, but whether that's the trick that they want to do or not is is up really up to them,
right?
Because I'm. I pretty much believe that it doesn't matter what tricks you do, it's how you present yourself at the table.
Right.
It's how you treat the people, mm-hmm. whether you treat them with respect. It's how you treat the wait staff, because the wait staff, you and the wait staff need to be a team. And the magicians that I've seen who fail at being restaurant magicians are the ones who don't think that they are team with the wait staff. They're the ones that think that they're more important than the wait staff.
Yeah. Now, do you split tips with them as well?
I've been doing restaurant magic for about 30 years, and I've lost count of how many restaurants I've done.
Yeah, right.
One of the restaurants I was at for 14 years, and I sort of tested with that with the staff if they wanted to split tips with me, and they would not do it. They didn't want my tips. They said, "No, you earned that." And also, it'd be really hard to tell. I mean, unless you just kind of tipped them all out, it's really hard to tell who you would actually give the tips to. Mostly because when I get tipped, and I never ask for tips, people will put money in my hand. You don't look at the money when you put it when they put it in your hand. You just put it in your pocket.
Right.
Sometimes they'll put money in my pocket, so because I wear a jacket, and they'll just put money in my pocket, and you just take it out of your pocket and put it in the pocket that you
your
keep
tip pocket,
or your tip pocket. You don't know how much you got at each table.
Well, what I would do is that whenever I get tips and if they're $1 bills, I put them in my pocket. But if they're 5, 10s, 20s, I'll leave them on the table. I have like my business cards and a little card thing, so that way they can hand out the card. I just leave it underneath that little card easel thing, you know.
And I think it all depends upon the kind of place that you're working.
Well, that's true.
Right. I'm working these upscale places where the people are tipping me kind of covertly.
Sure.
And so if I put money back, especially for the amount that they put, that would kind of be like, it wouldn't work in these restaurants. I mean, sometimes it's not uncommon for me to get a $50 or $100 tip, and you don't give that back.
Right. Well, that is something that comes along, I think, with those kinds of restaurants as opposed to a family restaurant or something.
Right.
I might also add to the listeners over here that we've got Oscar Munoz, who's with us sitting here. So you're not really a restaurant guy. You're really a kid show magician.
Right,
but,
Well, I do corporate. I do almost anything that pays. I mean, I work from working family shows, kids shows, to corporate and working at nightclubs.
Yeah. But you haven't ever worked in any restaurants then necessarily? Or?
No, I for me, that's a hard thing for me to do. I mean, while people are eating, I just don't feel comfortable breaking into their conversation. I think that's really hard to do. It's like busking. I couldn't busk. I instant rejection for me is like, oh my God, I, that kind of thing is not.
Well, you got to come to my lecture.
Well, same thing like with cocktail parties. Whenever you're strolling and walking around, and you're walking up to a group of people, and they're engaged in conversation, you're having to interrupt them, and say, "Hey, look at this greatest card trick you've ever seen." So you can't really do that. I think you're
right. No, I don't. Yeah, because you might be interrupting a breakup. Yeah, you know, you might be interrupting a proposal. You might be interrupting. A murder. You never know.
I mean, job or whatever.
A murder?
Well, yeah, you know, the guy's about to kill him. And he goes, "What are you, like, nuts? I'm going to just knife this guy and you're going to pick a card?"
Yeah. I had a knife on my shoe and I was
about to give this guy one.
A car stab, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to, you know, instantly.
Use that knife. Yeah. And what kind of places are you working?
Well, you know, I live close to the border, so you never know what you might run into. No, it's really, I mean, obviously I'm joking, but
there is a skill to the approach.
Yes, definitely is. Yeah. I mean,
well,
I remember,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Oscar.
I remember Michael Amar would talk about, you know, breaking the ice kind of a thing, was he would walk over to the table with a sugar packet and say, "I'm sorry, did anybody order the sugar packet?" And it was like, "What?"
Odd.
And then he would say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm the house magician." And that was his way in. I mean, that's a story I heard. I really need to talk to Michael.
And in some communities that works, in the Midwest, I don't know that that would work so well. They like having people be straightforward and more direct, yeah.
Well, it also helps if maybe the restaurant you're working in has a little table tent that has your picture and appearing nightly today. Now you're almost like introduced while you sat down, you're reading whatever's on the table, whatever's...
I think that's important. You also have not only, if you can't have a lobby card or something as they come in, you know, Magic Tonight or something. Right. Do you have that?
I don't. The places that I work, that just doesn't go.
So when you walk up to the table, do they know what you're there?
What's your opening line?
Well, here's the thing. I've got four ways for the approach. The first is I'm requested. People know I'm there and I'm really...
You know.
You've been
known,
there. Right?
So I'm requested. The other one is if there are kids there. Now, these upscale restaurants, I'm going to say about 30% of the tables will have kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's a given. You step up to the table and say, "Hey, I'm the magician at whatever restaurant."
Boom, the hero.
And the parents go, thank you. So that one is a given. The next one is the host or the server brings you over. And the host and the server love to have you at the tables because that livens up the place.
And prolongs the service, the meal.
A lot of times that's not necessarily what you want. You want you want to turn the tables.
Oh, gotcha.
So what you want is they've delivered the water, they've delivered the menus, maybe they've ordered the appetizers, and now there's a wait because the server is slammed, the kitchen is slammed, and there's got to be some time fill. If you can kill 10 minutes, that saves the restaurant. Right?
You're golden for the restaurant. Yeah.
Right, so it's great for the restaurant. So that's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
The people at the table don't notice the 10 minutes, but it saves the server and it saves the kitchen.
Gotcha.
Right? So the server and the host knows exactly the tables where the magician is useful. Okay, so that's the third one. The fourth one is if the server says, "God, Suzanne, I'm slammed, go to table 14.
Yeah, you help out.
Okay, that's the one that I truly approach. So this is what I say. Let's say I'm working at the place that I work on Fridays, Birch's restaurant.
Okay.
So I'll approach the table and I'll say, "Hey, my name is Suzanne and I'm the magician here at Birch's restaurant. Your server told me you guys are the coolest people in the whole place. She wanted to send me over to do some magic for you. You want to see some magic?" They never say no. They've been told that they're the coolest people in the place.
Right?
They never say no. Now, I say that to every single table.
They don't know
But they don't know that.
Yeah.
You know? And then they have a great time. So it's a positive, confident approach. And they don't mind you being interrupting them. You don't interrupt them when they're eating. If there's food on the table, you don't go there.
Right.
Appetizers is different, though. You can be there when appetizers are there. But when the meal comes... You are not there.
Do you normally go before or after?
If the restaurant is busy, I go before. If the restaurant is not super busy and they don't need to turn the table,
right.
And you know when they need to turn the table, you just get the feel of
right.
it, right?
So when you work a table now, do you work it off? Does the restaurant pay you to do that,
yes.
or do you work at the table?
Yeah, I wouldn't go to the restaurant if they didn't pay.
Okay. Well, In other words, I mean, you won't want to work for tips.
No. Okay. Because if I only worked for tips, then I'd have to hustle tips.
That's right.
And that has a whole other feel to it.
It does.
Right?
Okay, yeah, sure.
That's busking.
That's busking. So sometimes I'll have people ask, because they're unsure, are we supposed to tip you?
Right.
And I say, oh, no, you don't have to. The house pays me well.
Yep, I always say
gotcha.
Right.
Yeah, the house pays me well, but they want to tip me anyway.
Right, okay.
Right. So what would be your opening effect? Are you something that's fast, flashy, or minimalism that takes longer once you introduce yourself?
So I break all the rules. Everybody says never open with a card trick. Well, if you've ever seen my castle act, the first two card tricks that I do, actually, and I put Chicago Surprise in the middle, I do that blank card trick, then I do Chicago Surprise, then I do card to pocket. And depending upon...
Is Chicago Surprise, that's Chicago opener? Is also, or is that different?
Chicago Surprise is different than Chicago Opener. Chicago Surprise is the way that Whit Pop Hayden does it.
Okay.
And that's different, right?
Yep, it is.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's based on that. And then
Okay.
I interrupt. So go ahead. So you do open with a card trick.
Yeah, I open, and all I do is cards for my first set. Hmm. And then I'm out.
Really? So like about 5 minutes or so and in and out?
Oh, gosh, no. I'm probably there for 10 to 12.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you can milk. I mean, the blank card trick, turn them real, Chicago Surprise, card to pocket, and then...
So you're basically just carrying a deck of cards. You don't have like a ton of stuff and doing three fly.
Okay, so this is what I have on me. I have a blank deck. I have a regular deck. I have a silver... 50-cent pieces for coins across and some stuff for little kids, because like if a kid is three, you're not going to be able to do a card trick for a little kid. So, you know, you make coins disappear and,
right.
and come out their ears and come out of their shoes and
stuff
like that.
Could you bring Spongeballs or no?
No, you know what? I've never been a fan of Spongeballs.
Really?
They work for other people, and I know lay people love them, but I don't know. I just could never get my...
Sponge rabbits or nothing's fun.
I could never get myself wrapped around.
Is it because of putting it in their hands and it's kind of hygienic?
I think it's more that I've worked more... That seems like a kid trick to me. It's probably not. I mean, adults like the sponge thing, too.
They do.
I used
to walk around like a corporate effect, you know,
yeah,
which
maybe.
I'll pull a rabbit, you know, so you get a little hair on your shoulder there, you know. And
yeah, I don't know. Maybe because I trained from Al Schneider, and Al would have poo-pooed sponges.
Well, that's true.
Mr.
Matrix.
Right, yeah. So he would have poo-pooed sponges, but he also poo-pooed cards, so, mm-hmm. and I'm doing that, so.
Except to hide coins.
Right, yes, right, exactly. But so I'll have that, and then I also have Extreme Burn on me. Oh, and I always carry Card Warp with me.
Using Extreme Burn, you know, I have not ever used that at a restaurant because I feel like if I can change once to hundreds or something.
No, you got to do it different than that.
Oh?
No.
What's
you want to know my pattern
for it? Yeah, I
do. Okay, so you guys know Extreme Burn, right? So I'll count. Okay, so look, I'm going to show you something. It's not really a magic trick. And it's not a multi-level marketing scheme either. I know it's going to sound like one. I'm serious, it's not.
Okay.
Okay, I am looking for distributors, though, just in case. Okay, so here's the thing. I've got one, two, three, four. That's $1, right? I've got $5. That's $1, right? That's $1.
Right.
Okay, so this is the thing. I have this great product at home. It's called Camo Cash. Now, let me tell you what Camo Cash does. You take a bigger bill, like a, you know, 20, 50, 100, like that. You spray the Camo Cash on it, camouflages it, makes it look like a one. Now, this is a safety thing. It's a safety measure. If you're going to go, like, downtown to Detroit or something like downtown Chicago, something like that. Some of the scary areas. Not here. Not in Spring Lake Park. That's where one of the really nice restaurants where I work is. Not in Spring Lake Park. Not in Long Lake. Not in those places. No. But, you know, scary places. You don't want to be carrying a whole lot of money, right? So, but if you do want to spend this money after it's camouflaged, you just wipe it off. And now look, that's 100, right? That looks like 100. That's 100. This is 100, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to keep it like this, right? I mean, you know, what if you're going to go to a seedy area? So you just camouflage it again. That is the neat thing about the Camo Cash is it has that re-camouflaging capability. So you can be a distributor for just get two cases Oh, and you want me to do that to your ones? No, no, no. That's called counterfeiting. That's a completely different thing.
Yeah. Okay.
But what you could do is you could give me 100. I'll take it home. I'll spray the camo cash on it, and I'll send you back the one.
Yeah. So now, do you have like a little spritzer or something you actually spray on there?
No, I used to carry a spritzer around because, the Downy Wrinkle Relief stuff had like this great bottle. It's like, I don't know, like how tall is that? Like 4 inches or something like that?
Yeah.
With a little spritzer thingy on it.
I'm going to call it 8 inches.
Yeah, well, my husband calls that 8 inches, yeah. What? Oscar, what? That
is nothing.
That's 8 inches, right?
That, yeah, I guess.
So I pulled the label off of that, and I did this like camouflage thing, and it had camo cash written on it, and I sprayed it on. But it was kind of a pain to carry that around, and it also made the bills a little gummy.
Yeah,
so,
after a while.
I mean, I didn't keep the wrinkle release.
I always thought that if you're able to do that, then they're going to say, "Well, gee, why should I even give you a 10 or 20?"
Right. Yeah. So I never liked the concept of look at me. I got these ones. I can trade them in. I can turn them into hundreds.
Right. I do that in corporate walk around, but not in restaurants.
Right. No. And I wouldn't do. I personally don't like it at all. I mean, it depends upon the person, right?
Yeah.
But, why am I not feeding the poor if I can turn ones into hundreds? Why am I driving
Mother
a car?
Teresa, yeah.
Right,
Mother
exactly.
Suzanne.
Why am I driving a car with rust on it,
And so what else are you going to be talking about on your restaurant lecture?
I like to talk about connecting with the audience and how restaurant magic is the perfect way to learn how to connect to people, because you get five to ten opportunities to connect to a brand new group every single time you work. And if you can take that skill set of connecting with people,
right,
and you're going to get totally different responses from the different groups, right? If you can take that skill set and move that into your other magic, it can really skyrocket your ability.
Do you also in your market area do some parlor or also some larger stage things for larger groups, or do you just mainly focus on close-up?
I mainly focus on close-up. I do have a parlor show, but
you don't prefer doing that?
No, really? I don't really care for it that
I
much.
Love doing
I mean,
that.
I like it okay. It's just I'm better at the other stuff.
Yeah.
And I think I'm better at the other stuff because I do it more.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love restaurant magic. I love walk around. My favorite show though is driving to the big couple million dollar homes, being invited in, and these people have seen me at the restaurant or they've seen me at other parties.
They treat you like a best friend.
They treat me like a best friend.
Yeah.
And they have a place all set for me to do my show, and I do a 40-minute
Do you really?
Show, yeah.
Huh.
And I
like in their library or someplace.
Yeah.
You know, I've done that a time or two, but typically when I'm working in a home, I'm walking around.
Yeah,
over the kitchen.
I do three or four of those a month, and I love it.
Yeah.
If the only thing I ever did ever was restaurant magic, because I really do love restaurant magic. Oh, this is a little aside. So many people will say, oh, yeah, if you're just starting out, do restaurant magic, and then after you get good, you quit doing that, and then you go on to other stuff. I've been doing restaurant magic for 30 years. I have never, since I started doing restaurant magic 30 years ago, not had at least one restaurant. There was a period of time that I had four restaurants, and I was working four or five nights a week.
I look back at Charles Green, for example, in Houston whenever I first moved to Houston, and he was working 9 restaurants in 1 week.
Wow.
Yeah. If that's possible,
lot.
Out of 7 days a week, he's working, well, some of them were the same places, but 9 different gigs that he had. And his philosophy was not to solicit tips, but his long-term goal was to use
get
that as a launch.
Right.
Exactly.
Yep.
Launch that into trade shows, which he did.
Yeah.
And he was, little at a time, as he was starting to go and do these, that he would give us the restaurant saying, Scott, can you go work the country club this weekend or the grill or wherever? And so I was able to fill in until finally his trade show took off, and he kind of, never did a restaurant again as far as I know. So I think sometimes, for some people, that may be a means to an end.
Right, exactly. And if I wanted to do trade shows to where I was traveling all the time and that sort of thing, then getting out of restaurant business.
If that's what you want to do.
Yeah, if
but
that's what you want to do.
You're a mother and have a family.
Oh, well,
and so
my, I'm a mother of a 25-year-old.
Okay,
so,
well,
so
okay.
I mean, I'm technically a mother,
yes.
But...
but you really don't want to be traveling all the time away from your husband, though, either.
No,
yeah.
I don't. Yeah. I like my house, and I like my dog, and I like my
horse. You got a horse, yeah.
I have a horse, and I'm kind
you
of...
Notice she never said her husband.
No, I did. Didn't I?
Did she say husband?
No. You like my house. You
I like my house.
Dog,
I like my
dog.
Dog
like
and my horse.
Horse.
He's not listening to this.
Just saying.
I do like my husband. Yeah, yeah. He's a good guy.
But she loves her horse.
I love my horse, yep.
You do a lot of traveling, Oscar. I mean, you... For the school shows, you made me travel around Houston. You were traveling around the valley for a long time, moving to San Antonio, and you really traveled around Texas.
Right.
You're like the new J.B. Bobo, you know.
Right, right. I travel. Well, now that I moved to San Antonio, my doors a lot have opened in San Antonio, and now, I mean, I can drive up to Houston in 3 hours versus 6 hours from the valley. So now that, you know, it opens a lot of, you know, areas for me to work in. You know, right. Dallas is only 4 hours.
Right. Well, you're more centrally located, for sure, in San Antonio than where you were out in far Texas.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And so it's I mean, the birthday market down in the valley, is I can do three shows on a Saturday, three on a Sunday, because it'll take me from my house to Brownsville, let's say, it's only an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the cities in between are right next to you. I mean, you got Far Juan, Alamo, you got Donna, Weslaco. You got San Mateo, Harlingen, and Brownsville, and those are the cities that I can reach within an hour, 45 minutes, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you get across town in San Antonio, it's 45 minutes. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be able to do as many birthday parties on the weekends that I would have if I was still living in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
So it balances it out. I mean, but still, yeah, I travel a lot. And sometimes I don't see my wife or my daughter for 3 to 4 weeks. Sometimes, you know.
Well, you're also not only that, but you're traveling and doing other conventions and doing things
sure.
out of the country. You
yeah,
know?
Out of the country. Blackpool, England. London, Magic Circle.
Yeah,
and then so it's sometimes by myself most of the time.
Well, they're bringing our pizza, so it's about
time to eat.
So that's great. Well, thank you guys very much. I appreciate your time.
You.
That's very good. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Suzanne and Oscar Munoz.
Bye, guys.
Scotty out. Well, I don't know about you, but I learned a lot after talking with those people and hearing their different ideas. I think that Suzanne had some great thoughts on working with restaurants. I like what certainly that Oscar had to say, and Michael is always someone wonderful to talk with and very insightful as well. Hope that you guys learned a lot from it as well. So that wraps us up for day 3 from Jacksonville, Florida, and tomorrow we'll go into day 4, and so stay tuned for that, and we'll post that as soon as it's available. And I thank you for coming along and for listening to The Magic Word. This is Scotty out.